Happy birthday to you. Happy
John,
birthday to
John, what are you
you.
doing?
I'm singing happy birthday.
Well, that's debatable. I guess, why are you singing happy birthday?
Because it's our birthday. This is our 500th episode.
Oh, so you're singing happy birthday to the Queer Money Podcast.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, that's exciting. Although traditionally, this would be called a milestone, not necessarily a birthday.
Happy milestone to you.
So I guess we are celebrating today. You're listening to Queer Money episode 500. And today, like I said, we're celebrating our 500th episode. Let's get down to business. You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC.
Can you believe it? 500 episodes.
That's
I
nuts.
Remember sitting at our dining room table when we had the condo back in 2016, doing the editing for our first couple of episodes. And I never in my mind imagined that it would be 8+ years later and 495, 97, 99 episodes along the way that we would finally get to this point.
And we had like 208, 70, 80, 90 guests.
Yes, roughly around 270, 275 guests.
So yeah, it's phenomenal. And I think it's also, when I think about how we started, like we won a microphone in a contest and we recorded the podcast on a glass table in our concrete encased living room and dining room. So everything about that violates everything about sound quality.
Yeah.
And I've listened to some of the older episodes recently. It's like you can hear the echoing.
They're really shitty.
It's pretty bad. And the editing was creative, I'll say.
Yes, it was.
So, but luckily, I think we've improved at least a little bit. Yeah. But, and I think 500 is I take that as an especially big milestone because there are a lot of podcasts out there, but not a lot of them have been around for a long time. In fact, according to an industry site called Yagora, there are over 150 million podcast episodes that have been created in totality around the globe.
Jeez.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That's a lot.
And 44% of podcasts have fewer than three episodes.
So somebody has either come out with one, two, or three episodes and then quit.
Right, right. And just over about 720 podcasts have more than 10,000. But the average
720,000 podcasts
have more than 10 episodes.
Have more than 10 episodes.
Right. And the average for podcast episodes is 50 per show.
Right. So the average podcast has 50 episodes.
Yeah.
And we have 10 times that. You know, one of the things I will say, and you'll guys will get the double entendre here, is we may not be the biggest podcast out there, but boy, do we have staying power, right? We have gone on a lot longer than so many other podcasts.
Yeah. And I think it's especially so when you think about podcasts made for LGBT people by LGBT people. There are even fewer. I did some digging on Wikipedia, the savant that Wikipedia is. I'm not sure how for whatever. So I looked at like LGBT podcasts and Wikipedia came up and it doesn't list our show. So I don't know exactly why or who's updating that, or I don't know how to update Wikipedia or who's doing it. I just always figured it was like the minions in the background kind of updating it. So apparently they're ignoring us. So with that context, I use that as his data source, but it looks like Dan Savage has the longest running podcast, but he's an LGBT person,
yeah,
not necessarily creating a show for LGBT people. He does cover LGBT topics a lot. Mm-hmm.
From time to time.
But it's not really an LGBT podcast per se.
Right.
Of the oldest LGBT podcasts, so that's LGBT hosts for LGBT listeners, the oldest that I can find is a gay and a non-gay, which is James Barr and Dan Hudson. So I guess it's a half a gay.
Yeah.
The other is not a gay. Then there's Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness, who everybody knows. And then I think if my math is correct, and that's debatable as well, we're tie for number three. So at the very least, we're probably in the top five, but we're tied for number three with the Penumbra podcast that's hosted by Harley Takagai and Kevin Vibert.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the pronunciation of these names. Yeah.
I have to listen to your podcast. But according to them, we're kind of the timeline listed on Wikipedia. We're kind of like right in there. So I think that it's a safe bet to say that we're one of the top five longest running LGBT podcasts for LGBT people.
Yeah. And you know, when I think back to how we got started, it was 2015 that you and I went to our first personal finance conference, being around other people who were kind of in the personal finance space. Although we had been blogging under Debt Free Guys for over a year at that point, it was at that conference that you and I looked around and we were like, there ain't no other queer people here, or at least they're not out. And that was a major red flag to us that, hey, once again, the financial services industry is ignoring LGBT people. And we, I guess, have to do something about that. And that is almost always the case. Whenever you look at any company that has decided to do something positive for the LGBT community, it wasn't started by an ally. It wasn't started by a marketing person. It was started by someone in that company that was a part of the LGBT community and wanted their company to take on this responsibility of representation. And that's what we did back in 2015. We started having these conversations around what we wanted to do and how we wanted to do it. And that's when we came up with the idea of having the Queer Money podcast. Right. And we kicked off our show on June 3rd, 2016. That was the very first episode. That was the day it was released. We had
we had several fits and starts to get to that point. It was kind of ugly. It was an ugly mess.
Yeah, we had a train. We were working on a train wreck of a platform called Blab, which no longer exists. But it took us a little bit of time to bootstrap our own podcast and start getting it out there and discovering all of that on our own around what we do. Today, there's a whole industry around how to create a podcast, and everyone's trying to get your money if you're a podcast host. I mean, God, we get emails almost every single day about somebody saying how they would like to provide services for our podcast. Give me $2,000, $5,000 a month for your podcast.
I didn't look it up, but thinking about the numbers, the number of podcasts that are out there, actually, you might know this, the amount of money that podcasts generate, like the average podcast generates. Do you remember that? I know that Joe Rogan is like the leading money generator.
Even saying his name on our podcast episode.
Earns like millions of dollars a year from his podcast. But like most podcast hosts or podcasts aren't generating a lot of money, if any money at all.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, you probably look at the various ways that podcasts are generating money. You have ones that are sponsored like ours. You have ones where the podcast hosts are selling a product. They may provide coaching and that they're selling that product on their as their own advertising, or you have ones who are looking to their listeners to support the podcast through things like Patreon. And so there's a variety of ways. I know that in the marketing world, we just did some research a few weeks back for a partner, and their marketing dollars being spent on podcasts is expected to eclipse $4 billion this year.
It's starting to take over television and radio, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it just goes to show that there are opportunities in making money in podcasting.
But I think I'm thinking about that talk that we gave to that business partner. One of the benefits that brands have with sponsoring podcasts is that it really allows the brands to connect with a very specific demographic. It's like the example that we've used when we've talked about all these brands that want to sponsor the Super Bowl. There's literally no way to gauge whether or not people are actually keeping their eyeballs on the TV during those commercials, or if they're flipping to another channel, or if they're going to the kitchen to get a beer or a drink or whatever. You can make an assumption, or you can make some averages, but you can't actually say specifically how many people are listening to this particular episode and or this particular commercial and for what duration.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And also, you know, the targeted audience. I mean, you know, how many people, I'm trying to think of a good Super Bowl commercial, and Doritos always pops in my mind, but
I like State Farm, Kevin.
Almost everybody loves Doritos. So, but yeah, right. How many people are in the moment are thinking, okay, I need to get health or car insurance, right? So at least with your niche podcast, oftentimes you know what is of interest to the podcast listeners because of the topics that the hosts cover.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit now about how the podcast is going. And you just mentioned, you know, for niche podcasts, I think that we're still a niche within a niche because there are so few LGBTQ plus personal finance content creators. And it still surprises me. We just had this recently. Somebody said, I went online, I looked for LGBT and money. And you were you guys, the Queer Money Podcast was the only thing that popped up.
Yeah.
There's just not a whole lot of content out there for money. But, and I think that when you think about, there are 20 million LGBTQ plus people in the US, according to the US census, and that's 18 or over, right?
No, 20 million includes individuals who are 13 and over. Okay. It's roughly 13.9, almost 14 million for individuals who are adults.
Right. Well, we barely,
lots of baby gays out there.
Lots of baby gays. But we barely have 1% of that demographic listening to our show.
Yeah, exactly.
Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
You talked about it being a niche within a niche. I remember some of the data that we pulled. I think that 13% of podcast listeners listen to a personal finance or a finance related podcast. That even in and of itself is not a lot. The number of people who listen to podcasts, the number of people who listen to a finance podcast, and the number of people who are queer listening to a podcast is, you know, that we keep taking steps down. But we have individuals who email us every week, people who thank us on social media and give us reviews. We know that there is a craving for this content,
right?
Because
some people are liking it, apparently.
Yeah,
we've had
over 800,000 downloads of our podcast. In the average year, we're connecting with somewhere between 35 and 50,000 people. And so there are a lot of LGBT people who have, at least in the moment, have some interest in the idea of getting their shit together when it comes to their money, or maybe taking the next, maybe even taking a step further and thinking about tomorrow and how they're going to take care of themselves tomorrow and help take care of the community tomorrow.
Exactly. And then so over those 500 episodes, we've had a total of 270 different guests. Some people have...
No, actually, that was a little hard for me to separate. So we did have around 270 guests. I know that there were some of those who were duplicates.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say. Some of those, I know we've had some people on several times. I think of David Ray. I think we had him on 4 or 5 times. Brian Thompson, we've had him on a couple of times. So some of those are duplicates, but a majority of our episodes, I would say, are probably solo casts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, especially the bonus series. So a majority of those episodes are solo casts, but we've had almost 45 of the episodes where we've had guests, 45% have been women, 7% have been transgender or non-binary, 20% have been lesbian, 39% have been gay, and that does not include us in that percentage. And then 22% have been people of color, including Arab, Asian, Black, Indian, Latina or Latino, and Native American. So that's a number we definitely need to bump up. But that was the first time we actually ever cataloged our episodes that way.
Yeah.
Probably something we should have been doing all along, but those are the metrics, folks.
And we're being listened to all over. Our top cities in the US are some of the biggest ones: New York, Chicago, LA, Seattle, DC. But I also want to call out some of the small places. I know that there are small places, small cities all across the country. I don't know why, but you know, Columbus, Ohio keeps popping up. Salt Lake City keeps popping up. Salt Lake isn't such a small city, but not necessarily the cities you would think as big gay cities. Mm-hmm. Some of the
biggest, and we're global.
We are, yeah. International cities include Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, London, Croydon, England, which I'm not sure where Croydon, England is.
And, or if we're saying that right.
Right. And Newry, Northern Ireland, two locations we were like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that we had so many international listeners. I concentrated in particular cities. It's interesting, Ireland pops up because we actually were just recently asked by an organization in Ireland to do a speaking gig.
Yeah, I just say that Ireland is asking us to do a speaking gig.
The whole country.
The whole country. And then, so we alluded to this earlier, but we have never, ever asked a single listener or LGBT person to pay for the podcast. We have sold some of our own products and services on the show, but we've never asked for a Patreon. We've never asked for donations from the community. We've always sought the support of bigger organizations that have the funds to be able to sponsor the podcast, because we want to make the show as accessible to people as possible. And we don't want to have LGBT people have enough to pay for, and we have the pink tax. And so we don't necessarily want to burden folks trying to pay for the podcast so they can get this information. So we want to thank Capital One, especially for supporting us for, I think we're going on our, we're on our fourth year with Capital One.
Fifth year
with Capital One. MassMutual, who was around when we got started. Gainbridge, who did some sponsorships as well, as well as Prudential. So we want to thank those companies for supporting us and allowing us to be able to make this content and have this conversation, which is a unique conversation for our community, free of charge.
Yeah. And you know, I'm just going to throw this in there. Why do we do this? Well, first of all, it took us over a year to get our first sponsor. So we were funding the podcast, the cost of having a podcast ourselves, right? Putting a podcast out there is not free. You have to pay for recording services. You have to pay for services that put your podcast out there.
Estimated we pay about $800 per episode. Including our time?
Not including our time. We spend roughly between $25,000 and $30,000 a year on services to help the podcast get created, whether that's audio production, video production. We have a virtual assistant that helps us with scheduling and putting content together. All of those kinds of things are part of the cost that we have associated with having a podcast. And we wouldn't be able to continue to provide this if it wasn't for some of those larger companies being able to sponsor at larger levels.
Okay, so let's think about it in totality. Think about all 500 episodes in your head right now. What are some of the grand takeaways that we have that might not be obvious to the everyday folk?
You know, I think back to an episode that we did where we identified something that we call cascading homophobia. We were talking about and thinking about what makes money different for LGBT people, especially from the vantage point of being discriminated against. And you and I started having this conversation about when we worked at Schwab, and we constantly kept on being told, no, we aren't going to do this for your community. No, we're not going to do this for the LGBT group, but we are going to do this for women, and we are going to do this for the Chinese group, and we are going to do this for the veterans group. And we started seeing this, and we started thinking to ourselves, why is it that these two people who are quote unquote leaders of all the BRGs, why do they keep telling us no when they're telling all these other groups yes? And we're like, look at the structure of Schwab. And we knew that the individuals at the top of Schwab were self-identifying religious fundamentalists and born-again Christians. And so we knew that there was some decision being made at the top that was pushing down to us saying, no, we're not going to support this as a company. And that's where we started talking about this idea of cascading homophobia, of when LGBT people are being told no, whether that's for a promotion or being put onto a project or given opportunities, they're being told no because the person who is above them that could say yes doesn't want to have to say why when they're talking about why they allowed this to go forward to someone higher who has been or vocal about being homophobic or maybe has made it insinuated that they're homophobic or just because of how they're out about their religion, then you know that they're going to be homophobic. So I think that was one of the biggest.
There's a good chance, not guaranteed.
Right. There was one of the big things that I think that came out of this working on trying to talk about why money is different or how money is different for queer people. That is one of the things I think we landed on. And I was like, this is something that no one else is really talking. We talk about discrimination, but we don't talk about how that kind of discrimination can sometimes be passed down by our people who are our quote unquote, our allies, but don't want to have to say or explain why to someone above them.
Any other hot takes?
Well, I think that this whole idea of why money is different for queer people is something that keeps popping up, things that we have talked about or worked on. You know, the whole idea of legacy financial exclusion. This was another episode that we did early on. That was episode 268. And what we talked about there is What are some of the things that happen in the lives of LGBT folks that are different from their non-LGBT counterparts that actually hinder their financial progress?
And throughout various stages of life.
Right, exactly. Things like how many queer kids leave a home and become homeless because they can't be in that toxic environment anymore. And for that reason, they set themselves up to be at a disadvantage financially, many of them at a disadvantage financially because they're in desperate situations, right? They're living on the streets and they're desperate for a job. They're desperate for making money to try to figure out how to take care of themselves. And oftentimes desperation leads to being taken advantage of, mm-hmm. or just starting your career at a really low wage. The other thing is we talked about college aid and how so many queer kids are leaving home to get away from that toxic family or toxic family environment. And they're going to college away from home, oftentimes without the financial aid or support of their family, and taking on more and more student loan debt because they want to be in quote unquote safe places where they think that they are going to be able to be a little bit more vibrant as an individual.
Authentic. Yeah.
And that is just hindering them financially, you know, and then all the times you look at how individuals, queer people leave home and they may not be getting the kind of support, like help getting the down payment on your first apartment, a down payment on your first car, or buying your first car, or buying the set of towels, buying the set of dishes, those kinds of things. We don't really think about being too expensive. But when you add up all the costs of moving out on your own, or the fact that 47% of millennials still have their parents paying for some aspect of their daily life, there are a lot of queer kids who are left out of that, those kind of financial benefits, including up to getting married. How many queer people do we know that have literally said that they spent tens of thousands of dollars on their wedding, but they did it all themselves? Now, that's a badge of honor to be able to say you did it all on your own, but wouldn't you love to have an extra $10,000 or $20,000 coming from your parents on either side of your family to put towards that wedding, like many of your straight counterparts are? It does set us up financially for disadvantage, especially if you look at how much that money would be if it was compounded over 25, 30 years towards retirement. In some cases, that's $375,000 to $450,000.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's really been striking over the last 500 episodes is the Gay Cities, or the Queer LGBTQ Plus Affordable Friendly City series. I think the takeaways have been so striking, and mostly because, you know, especially on social media, when we share the content on social media, the LGBT people from the less desirable locations, the less cliche locations, are really big advocates for where they live and the community that they're a part of in these smaller cities.
Yeah.
And that has really, like, the percentage of people, LGBT people from red cities or red states who are big advocates for where they live is striking. Now, there's always the naysayers for each location, but you have that for, you know, all locations typically, right? There's some people love it, some people hate it. You're not going to win in every case, but the percentage of LGBT people in the more rural, more redder areas is really striking to me.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, you bring that up. One of the things that I hear oftentimes in those conversations is how these queer people talk about how strongly knit or how close knit their LGBT community is in those cities. And I rarely hear people talking about how closely knit their LGBT community is in big blue cities, right? Especially big blue cities and big blue states. I hear a lot of people talk about how they feel they moved to New York from, well, these are perfect examples, people who we knew who moved to New York from Denver and people who moved to LA from Denver and then moved back and said they felt like they were alone because there were just so many people that people treated them like they were less valuable or less desirable because they didn't come with all the things of having lived in New York or LA for an extended period of time.
Right. And very often those cliques are kind of formed and it's hard to get into those cliques. I know that we've been to LA and San Francisco or a couple of, you know, New York City, and we could go an entire weekend without talking to another LGBT person.
Yeah.
Unless we're like really proactive about it, or, you know.
And I will say, you know, we're not necessarily promoting that people move to red states or people move to purple states or these locations. But I think it's important to remember that queer people live everywhere. More than 30%, more than a third of LGBT people in this country live in red states, and nearly half of us live in red and purple states. So there's a lot of people. If you just discount red and purple states, you're discounting a lot of our community. And personally, I think I take that slightly offensive that you're discounting other people in our community.
And I think that, to me, what's so striking about that is because, you know, I've never really done that kind of analysis of the community and the country like that before, like we have over the last year or so. But just looking at the LGBT friendly TV shows and movies, they're always based in New York City or LA. It's like, you kind of get the impression that that's the only place where we're from. And like
Laverne and Shirley was in Milwaukee.
True. And there are, you know, of course, they, you know, I definitely know that there are, you know, those outlier movies that aren't based in those. Brokeback Mountain is a key example, right? There are movies that aren't, they're not all based in those two cities, but just kind of seems like that's where we're always supposed to be from. And right. If we're not from there, then we're almost like a second class citizen in our own second class community.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. You and I, we do talk about this whole idea of how when someone finds out that we're from Toledo, Ohio, there is a pregnant pause of them trying to figure out whether they
want
to congratulate us or say that they're sorry for why we've chosen to live in Toledo, Ohio. It does feel like there is a pause there saying, I wouldn't respond the same way if they were from New York or LA or Denver or Chicago or anywhere
expected.
Like that, right? The expected places. And I think it's really important for us to remember we are a community. When we stick together, we are stronger, right? And the more we become divisive in our community, the more we look down our nose at other people in our community, the more we separate as a community. And that is exactly what the religious fundamentalists want. They want us broken apart as a community because we're not strong then, yeah. Right? You know, that's one of the reasons why we have this podcast is because we want strength in numbers and strength in financial numbers for our community.
Yeah. And talking about strength, I think that's one of the other things that has stood out to me with the surveys that we've done and the responses that we get in comments and emails, just the percentage of our listeners, and maybe this is just a slice of the community overall, but the percentage of our listeners who are interested in more of the build a bigger life kind of aspect, abundance mindset, self-actualization, all trying to just look on the more positive, I guess, growth kind of mindset. I think it's been very striking and inspirational. I mean, we could be talking a lot about the negativity and the challenges that the community has because they're abundant and we have talked about them. But it always seems like the more higher level, I don't know what to call that.
Higher vibration.
Higher vibration, yeah. Content always really resonates with people.
Get your mind out of the gutter, not that kind of vibrator.
But consequently, on the flip side, it's also striking, and we've talked about this before several times on the podcast, the number of gay men specifically in their 50s and 60s who reach out to us saying they haven't prepared for retirement and want a solution for what to do right now. There must be others in the community having the same challenges. They're just not reaching out to us. I mean, I'm guessing. But the number of gay men specifically who have reached out to us via email or direct message on that topic has always been very striking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we're remedying that here shortly.
Yeah, exactly. One of the other topics that we covered that was new to me, and I will be 100% honest with you all. The reason why I found out about this topic is I saw one of our colleagues in the personal finance space post about this, and that was the EPRA. That's the Employment Participation and Repayment Act. You know, we're all talking about and getting excited when we hear Biden talk about student loan debt being forgiven, but there are literally hundreds of companies out there that will hand you a check to help you pay for college classes that you already took. They're helping you pay down your debt. We talked about this on episode 262, and I'm really surprised that more people in general, especially LGBT people, because we typically have higher student loan debt than others, I'm really surprised that more people aren't talking about this and encouraging their friends to ask, right? I think that this should be something that at least twice a year, maybe even quarterly, you email your HR department, have you guys decided to start participating in the Employment Participation and Repayment Act.
Yeah. EPRA for short.
Yeah. It, in the EPRA, because literally for some of you, this, it's going to be a whole year's worth of, you know, if you got the full amount, $5,250, that may be a whole year's worth of student loan payments for you. Wouldn't it be nice to not have to pay a student loan payment this year? Check with your HR department.
Yeah. And listen to episode 262. And then I think the other thing, we talked about Farnoosh Torabi on episode 492 a couple of weeks ago about this, but I'm still struck by the percentage of people and brands who just kind of, you know, Madonna sings about it in Drowned World.
Oh God. Of course we have to have a Madonna reference in this.
About the people who just want to be in her spotlight, right? And then clearly we're not on par with Madonna. But it is striking the percentage of brands who literally would come on our show every single episode to talk about whatever it is they want to talk about their company. But then when you reach out to them and you say, hey, we've had you on several times, or we're considering you having you on several times, would you help us finance this show so we can keep it together and make it better and bigger? And then it's always like, no.
Or we just get ghosted.
Or we just get ghosted. So I thought this was, you know, unique to us, but in speaking with Farnoosh, it seems like it's pretty ubiquitous. Companies always trying to figure out how to get free PR.
Yeah.
And then when you ask for some kind of remuneration, they're not available. And then I think also, this has maybe come up, I guess it started to come up about a year ago or so, but we kind of feel like we're like too gay for straight people and we're not queer enough for some queer people.
Yeah.
Some of the negative comments that we've gotten, it's kind of like we're threading a needle trying to, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we literally have been told we're not going to listen to you. I can't take advice from you because you're cis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I didn't choose that. You didn't choose to be trans or non-binary. Why does that have an impact on whether or not we can have a conversation about your money and how it works for you? Right. And that's the reason why we have the Queer Money Podcast. We could call this the cis white gay man's podcast, but we didn't choose to do that. And that's why we have guests that are such a variety, because we need those voices on our podcasts to help folks understand that we are a community and we are trying to serve the community.
So what have been some of your favorite guests now that you bring that up?
I will say the guests that have, for the most part, that I have enjoyed the most are the ones that have opened my eyes to something. They brought something unique to the podcast, or they shared something with us that we were not aware of, or maybe not as aware of that we should be. For example, we had Dr. Hannibal Johnson on the podcast to talk about the history of Black Wall Street. For folks who are not familiar, and what is really interesting is right now, there is a case going on in Oklahoma with two women who are 100, and I think they're 106 and 109. They're the last two surviving individuals who were a part of the neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that the white mob literally bombed and burned down. And this was a part of Tulsa that was thriving, and the Black community was so empowered and doing all of the things that allow you to get to that higher vibration in life, right? Their families, they were doctors, there were lawyers, there was a bank for Black people, there were barbers, there were, you name it, everything that we need as individuals, they had a community there, and that community was completely destroyed. And it was a story that I had never heard growing up in Colorado. And then when I heard about it, started to hear about it in the early 2020, I think it was early 2020 or maybe, yeah, I think it was early 2020 that we first heard about it, that I was like, why do we not know about this? Why don't we know about these kinds of things? This is a pure example right there of how generational wealth was literally stolen from potentially hundreds of thousands or millions of Black families. And as those families grew and continued with their thriving lives. And I think it's those kinds of stories that I really, really, really love hearing more about or learning more about, because I think that our education system in the United States has failed us in many ways. And this is just an opportunity for us to help repair some of that.
Exactly. I think that episode struck me as well. I think in particular, because we actually had a Black person who was a listener of this show who went to Tulsa High School and said he never even heard about it.
Yeah.
And he went to the school where it happened. He had to talk to his grandmother about it, and his grandmother didn't really want to talk about it for obvious reasons, but it's still something that we should be learning about. Gets categorized as critical race theory, I guess.
Yeah.
One of the episodes that I loved was when we talked with Dividend Dream. I don't know their real name, but they go by Dividend Dream, so that's what we go by. Where they talked about how they navigate the corporate ladder. The strategy for how they did that was, to me, just mind-boggling. So we highly encourage everybody who's in corporate America and wants to climb up the ladder for whatever reason, you do you. The way that they did that was just phenomenal. There were some times where they were getting a six-figure salary from a new job while still getting paid severance from a previous job, because that's what they had negotiated in the hiring process even before they accepted the job. So the strategy there is really phenomenal. So I highly encourage our listeners to listen to that episode. I didn't write the episode numbers down, so I'm sorry.
Yeah. Of course, the other episodes that I love are the ones that make us laugh, right? Whether it's you make me laughing at you, which happens quite a bit.
No, you're laughing episodes. With me, not at me.
Right, exactly. But Tom Brickman, the frugal gay, coming on the podcast and talking about selling bras and purses as a way to, first of all, cover his expenses in college, to cover paying for his books in college, but then how he kind of continued to do that so that he could buy his first home. And that first home for him was a duplex where he lived upstairs and he rented the downstairs, so that during college, his cost of living was, I think he said around $318. And so he was able to actually go to school, work part-time at the Gap, sell bras and purses, and buy a home. Now, granted, it was here in Toledo, which the cost of living or the cost of housing was considerably cheaper back then. Actually, to be honest, it wasn't. I remember him telling us that when he bought it, within a couple of years, the housing market tanked and he lost a lot of the value of his house. And it's only recently come back in the last couple of years to be above that. But it was just a funny story. If you haven't watched the episode, or you don't know what Tom Brickman looks like, Tom is basically a bear, right? He's just a big bear.
Cuddly bear.
Big bear. And to hear him talk about picking through bras and building up his collection of bras that he could sell online is just kind of funny to hear when you think about a gay bear. It's just one of those pictures.
That's a dichotomy in itself. Dominique Jackson's interview really stands out to me too, in part because of the resiliency in her story. She talked about from a very early age being in Tobago, realizing that she didn't fit in, she didn't feel right. And of course, Trinidad and Tobago are very Catholic dominated countries. So she just didn't fit in there. And when she was dancing in her grandmother's backyard while grandmother was putting up laundry, and she was dancing there, and she said, "I know that someday I'll be known as Dominique Jackson," at like some 7 or 8 or 12 years old. That story is very striking. And then how she found her way over to the United States and how she lived hand to mouth, get started to find any sense of security. And it was still important for her to pay down her $20,000+ worth of debt. And she shared her strategy for doing that. So it just kind of shows, like, no matter how challenging things can be, we can overcome them.
Yeah. I'll let you know that that's episode 73. And the reason why I know it's episode 73 is I have listened to that episode probably 3 or 4 times.
That's why we have so many downloads for that episode.
Yeah.
You're doing it.
There are certain episodes that I go back and listen to as part of my mental health routine. It's an episode that inspires me. It gets me going. It reminds me that sometimes what looks like a horrible situation today can actually turn out to be something amazing if you give it the time and the energy and you keep going. And, you know, one of the other episodes that I really enjoyed was the episode with Ash Beckham. Ash Beckham, I can't remember, did she say, "Yes, I am that gay"? Ash Beckham gave a TED Talk about being out as a lesbian, and it was a TED Talk that it just exploded. Huge, millions of downloads. And Ash turned around and wrote a book about leadership. And some things that I found so interesting about her perspective and the people that she has talked to and worked with over the years is this whole idea of giving people grace because we may not think like they do, or they may not think like us, that we don't have to hate people who don't think and look and act like us. They're different, and diversity is something that our community celebrates. It's okay to have diversity of thought. And it was really important for Ash to take a moment and listen to other people when she was having a conversation with somebody who was a huge supporter of her, came to her wedding with her, she and her partner, her wife, and it was somebody who she thought was very, very supportive, and asked them, why did you vote for Trump in 2016? And just taking the time to listen, I thought was a really interesting thing, because oftentimes the leaders that are the ones that are the most toxic are the ones who won't listen to the people that they're leading, right? And that's why we all think that Trump is so toxic, is because he's not listening to the people who he's trying to lead. But I think if we take the time to listen to more people, we'll see how we are actually more alike in a lot of ways and less unalike or less different than we think we are. And that, I think, can bind people together or bring people together. It also gives people the opportunity, if we listen to them genuinely and honestly, they will listen to us, and we will learn something from them, and they will learn something from us. And that can change both of us and change us both for the good. And I think that the other thing that I really liked about Ash's book and what Ash talked about was this whole idea of, as LGBT people, there are so many things that we face in life that can actually be rolled into leadership skills. We oftentimes think that we're at a disadvantage because we are queer, because we have faced all these different things in our life, but things like resiliency, these are not traits that a lot of non-LGBT people learn from an early age. Yes, there are a lot of people who do have to learn resiliency, but as a community, every single one of us has had to build that resiliency because of who we are.
Yeah, we've had to navigate survival.
Yeah.
And then I think lastly, I guess that stands out to me is Jay Allen, who was a leader of ours at Schwab, ironically. But the way that he talked about how he built his career and how he was out from a very young age relative to what many people of his generation were able to come out at, and how he was still able to navigate a successful career as early as the 80s and 90s. That, to me, was another example of resiliency. And it just always struck me where he just made a commitment to his self that he will never not be himself in any environment that he goes in, whether that's in the boardroom or whether that's walking down the street with his partner, that he will not be himself. And he never got hung up with how that could harm his career. And he shares some stories about how he thinks that it did add some roadblocks to his career, but he was able to navigate that and to still get to become, I think at the time that he was an executive at Schwab, he was one of the highest ranking out LGBT people in corporate America.
Yeah.
So now that we have talked about the past and the present, what do we think we see in the offing there, husband?
Yeah. When I think about what's coming for the LGBT community and the evolution of the financial landscape for our community, I do think a lot about headwinds. And specifically, I think about the headwinds, the potential for even more headwinds in 2025, if things don't go the way we want on November 5th, 2024. I think that one of the things that we need to do as a community is we need to talk. We need to be much more vocal with each other about how we as a community can earn more. There is, unfortunately, the world we live in today, money equals power. And the more that we are disadvantaged in the world, the more our community earns less, the wage gap is there, the less power we have, because we are not then turning around and learning how to use that money to invest in a bigger life for our community and for ourselves. And I'm not talking about investing in having a nice car and having the designer clothes and having the vacations and the big house. I'm talking about investing in what we as a community, who we are as a community, allowing us to get stronger as a community. That is one of the things that we are at a disadvantage for, is that we have to fund things like that. We as a community need to be part of paying for strength in our community.
Yeah. And I think just by virtue of looking at the numbers that we have, the community still seems like it struggles to talk about money. And I think it's something that we really need to start embracing. Because to me, and I think to you, the root of all of this starts with just simply having the conversation. It's like I talked about earlier when I mentioned how Jason Muth trying to find any sort of LGBT money content out there, he only found us. We need more people talking more about it. It needs to become a popular topic. I don't know what it's going to take to do that, but it needs to become as ubiquitous as what we say the three P's are with LGBT media: penis, politics, pop culture. More in the community are talking about it. It's just simply not enough. You know, there have been fits and starts. I would say in 2019, it seemed like there were more LGBTQ plus people talking about money. I feel like that's kind of died away a little bit for whatever reason. Maybe 2020 kind of messed some things up. I know that, you know, David Ray is still writing for Forbes and Nick Walney does writes for Out and occasionally talks about LGBT money, but it's just not a pervasive topic. So we just need to figure out how to make it everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and a lot of that, I guess, is going to be contingent on the 2024 election.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Trump's elected, there might be more inequality in the community.
Yeah. I will say, I think that there are some positives out there. The things that we are seeing, like through our survey that we did with the Motley Fool, we saw that there is a growing number of trans individuals who are saying that they're earning six figures and more. And that is really a bright spot, because that's what our community needs. That's what their community, the trans community, needs. They need those kinds of examples, those kinds of elders who are trans saying, yes, you can hold a six-figure job and be an out trans person. We need people like that. We need those examples, those, you know, kind of heroes in our community to be therefore, not only us, but for the baby gays too, right? For all the queer kids, they need these kinds of examples. And I think that there are some bright spots for the community, as long as we as a community gravitate towards those kinds of bright spots.
I think another bright spot example is, I know it was 2016 and 2017. So I think it was 2016 and 2017 when Prudential did their LGBTQ money studies, that and their surveys found that the community by and large was unbanked. And the studies that we did with Motley Fool in 2021 and 2022 showed that we're really closing that gap, and more of us do have bank accounts and savings accounts, checking accounts, what have you. And so that alone, I think, is progress, because if you don't use a bank or a credit union, everything costs more. It's just more expensive. Yeah. The fact that multiple studies sort of suggest that we're closing that gap is inspiring. So, you know, as we've kind of said throughout the show, that's kind of why this show exists, is we're trying to help more LGBTQ plus people achieve financial security, because the stronger we are as a community, the stronger we are as individuals, the stronger we are as a community, the more money, time, and resources we have, so we can continue to fight for and push for our rights. And that's why a newer mission of ours that you might've heard us articulate over the last couple of months is we want to help create 1 million LGBTQ plus millionaires. So we have those resources to not only spread financial security among the community, but also continue to push for and fight for our rights. And so a resource that you can look to help maybe get that started for yourself, or if you know somebody needs it, is go to queermoneypodcast.com and download the free Queer Money Kickstarter. And in that guide, we'll help lay the foundation to start, be able to build your wealth pyramid. And in the near future, hopefully we'll have more conversations about an upcoming Queer Money Retirement Club that we're looking to host, as well as a future Queer Money Conference. So more in the offing on all that.
Yeah. And we know that there's a 2024 Queer Money live tour happening.
Yes, so more to come on that.
More to come on that as well.
Working on the dates there. So,
right. So stay tuned for your Queer Money takeaway from this episode.
In the market for a new ride? Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details. Thank you for joining us for another episode. This week's newsletter includes your queer money takeaway and resources mentioned in this episode.
Then join us Thursday when we share the most affordable LGBTQ-friendly cities in red states.
Ouch.
Yeah. And next Tuesday when we talk with a queer money listener per your feedback about their personal finance journey. It's a powerful episode that you don't want to miss. To be honest, it almost made me cry. So thanks again and have a great week.